You all tonight to this audit and accounts committee meeting. We are tonight going to be looking at the audit of the accounts for 2021. And I'll ask you first of all if you will approve the minutes of the meeting of the 30th of March, circulated and published on the 8th of April 2022. Thanks, Suella.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah. Just, but yep,
so, and you're happy that I sign them?
Oh, yes, please, Madam Chairman.
So, where are we going to sign?
Jeez. Just one line.
What's the
date? 21st. And just one there for the January meeting, which we did on team on Zoom. Don't need to date that one. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. 21st. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Right then, moving on, can I start by welcoming Avatar to our meeting this evening? Thank you very much for coming along, Avatar, and also can I welcome the Cabinet Member as well. And Judith, we'll welcome you as well, Head of Governance, thank you very much. And if we start then with the Officer's Report, we're going to start. Do we have apologies for this evening?
Certainly, yeah, Councillor Dodson.
Any substitute?
No.
No substitute, right, thank you for that. Right, so item 3, we're moving on. Item 3A, that is the audit findings for Staffordshire Council, and remind you that it's for the year ended the 31st of March 2021. So if you look at that, and if I ask you first, Avatar, would you like to just present the paper produced, please?
So, thank you, Chair. So I won't go through page by page, I'll just take it, the report as read, but I'll just give a quick summary of where we're at. So we're near completion of the financial statements audit. We are going to issue unmodified opinion, so there's no qualifications in our report. From the work that we've undertaken, it hasn't resulted in any material adjustments to the financial statements or the prime statements. We have found some disclosure changes in terms of the supporting notes to the prime statements, which is just around some inconsistencies or expanding narratives. So nothing which I would classify as significant in those in that, and it's just normal errors that we would find across our client base. We do know there was one unadjusted error, which was in relation to a building valuation where elements of cost wasn't included, and therefore the asset base potentially was misstated. But what we believe that the value is around, I think it was 117k.
Can you tell us what page you're looking at, please?
Page, just bear with me.
Page 11.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned several times, but it's there this morning.
Yes, so it's page 24 of our report, or page 26 of the pack. Okay. So it's 116k difference, but because this is not above our materiality level, we're happy that it won't lead into a material statement in the financial statements, and therefore we're happy that management's view not to correct it is appropriate, because it won't lead to a material stated financial statements.
Right, no cause for concern.
Yes, and no cause for concern. In terms of the value for money conclusion work, that is still ongoing, and we've had delays in completing that work, but what the standards actually say, the code allows us to do is complete that work after the audit opinion is given, so we do have a bit of latitude to get that done. So we certainly have the opinion that has been given. As a result of that, and also not us being able to complete the WGA work, in terms of WGA work, we can't complete the work because the instructions haven't been given to us on what work to be done, and they're coming out in July. Because of those two issues, we can't certify the audit as complete, but that's normal, and that is normal across all of the councils at the moment. Until that WGA work, all these audits will not be certified as complete.
So who is it that's holding that up?
It's the NAO.
Right.
In terms of what they have to do is issue instructions,
right,
and say the auditor needs to do X, Y, and Z.
Right.
And because we haven't been given the instructions, we can't
right.
do the test.
So
but for this council, there is minimal work required. So it's nothing which will take us long to do. It's just a return, but we can't do that return. So therefore, we can't certify the WGA work until that's done. Other than that, I just want to say it's probably a clean audit report. It's not, we haven't found, you know, material misstatements, and the financial the values in the financial statements are consistent with the draft version that we've got, that we've given. So ultimately, it's a quite clean report. Even though, I mean, it has taken longer than anticipated, you know, in terms of a normal timetable. Happy to take any questions at that point.
Emma, are you happy that you can hear?
Yes, I can hear you, Madam Chair.
Okay, that's fine, thank you. Right. Shall we just have a quick canter through this for any questions that you have? Right, look at page 6, 5, 6, 7 or 8, 9 or 10, 11 or 12, 13.
Yes, Madam Chairman.
Right.
You've explained the 160, but the valuation of properties valued by the valuer has resulted in a decrease of 3.1 million.
So this is a result of, if you compare what the opening balance in the financial statements was for as at 31st of March 2020,
yeah,
and comparing it to the figure as at 31st March 2021, what you'll see is the balance has decreased by 3.1 million, and that's based on the valuer's assumption of how they've done the valuations. We're comfortable with the work that we've done, that decrease is reasonable. We select a sample of assets that we test, we look at the assumptions used, compare them to other sources of information, and we're satisfied that the valuations that the valuers have done are free from material misstatement.
So you're happy with a 3.1 million
decrease? Yeah.
Can I bring in Emma at this point, please? Emma.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Having looked at this and prepared for the meeting, the major decrease is in relation to one particular asset. So, for example, the car park itself, the Waterfront car park, has had a reduction of 1.5 million as a single asset. And that's in relation to, obviously, the loss of income because the car parks are valued on the income base. So it's one aspect that's primarily swinging this as well. So just to give you a bit of flavour to that.
All right.
Sure.
Ian?
Yeah, I'm not sure who to put the question to, but I'm assuming that the valuation of the assets are post-depreciation. So they will have been, the assets would have been written down as is appropriate. Would that depreciation have been a significant number?
Emma.
Would you like to say that one? In terms of the assets themselves, they get depreciated and we value them at the end of the financial year to remove the valuation uncertainty.
Okay.
So it's a valuation as at the 31st of March 21.
And would the amount of depreciation have been a significant number when we're looking at the figure of 3 or whatever?
The depreciation would have been added back, so the valuation adjustment, I believe, was 6 million and 2 million was depreciation that we then added back.
Okay, thanks.
Are you happy with that, Ian?
Yes, thank you.
Right, moving on then. 15 or 16. 17 or 18. 19 or 20.
19.
19. Right.
You're delaying the certification?
Yeah, so that's a result of not being able to complete the value for money conclusion work at the moment, and also the WGA work. Once, again, as previously explained, once we've got the instructions on the WGA work, that should be quite quick to do. The value for money work is in work in progress at the moment, and we hope to get that work completed by the summer, and just be then, and after that, both of those elements are done, we'll be able to certify the audit's complete.
Right. You happy with that?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair.
Right, then page 21, 22.
Chair, I was going to ask about the value for money work, the one it was expected, but I think we've just had the answer. Is there any more we should know about the reason for the delay in the value for money work?
Okay, so in terms of what guidance we've been given as auditors is to focus on getting the financial statements audit done as the priority and then look at the value for money conclusion work. So given that we're just signing off the we should be signing off the financial statements at the end of this month, now we're going to focus on getting the value for money conclusion work done. And that's just been common practice across the sector this year, just because of ultimately just capacity issues and being able to deliver all the work.
Okay, so it's a natural knock-on effect to the delay. Thank you.
Right. You happy with that, Ian?
Yes.
Thank you. Can I just ask about the appendix G on page 21 that you referred to?
So sorry, I think that's where we've actually just got an error. But it should be Appendix E. So where we just say this, there's a delayed
a typing error. Yeah, you're assuming.
We have a reduction in the C, please.
Oh dear.
I might give you a penny off.
Right. Then on then to page 23.
Yeah. Yes. Madam Chair, 23.
Thanks, Roy, first please.
You said the final fee to be confirmed.
Yeah, so the work is still ongoing on the certification claim, and the 15,000 is in relation to when we've set a baseline fee. But what's happened over the years is the number of errors increasing. So what that means is that we're having to do more work on it. So at this point in time, I can't say what the final fee will be because the work hasn't been completed and certified just yet. But we'll come back with what the final fee is and just give it a justification to say this is why, because we've increased the workload.
So just another £500 then onto the fee, is that right?
Unlikely.
So anything else on that?
I was happy with that explanation actually.
Right then, so in fact you don't charge for the, or you don't do a housing benefit whenever you're doing the audit?
No, so there's two separate engagements, you see. So the housing benefits work is done for the DWP, in terms of, because they give you the income in terms of housing benefit subsidy. So we are engaged by DWP to do check the figures in the claim and report on is the expenditure correct, what's been claimed for. So that falls out of the scope of the actual financial statements audit. Although there's a few elements where when we do test benefit expenditure, we do have a bit of cross-reference to some of the work that we do on housing benefits. just to avoid duplication, but it's they are two separate audits.
Right, fine, thank you. Right, page 25 or 26. Yes, Ian.
Obviously, I think this will have raised a few eyebrows. Could I ask, are we satisfied that there is policy and procedures in place to prevent the recurrence of this? It seems quite extraordinary.
You need to ask that again here, I don't think it's fully heard.
Sorry, who's going to, who should I be addressing? I'm not sure.
Well, I ask your question again and then they'll answer it.
Yeah, so I'm looking at page 25, the unpresented checks. And the question really is, are we satisfied there is a policy or procedures in place to prevent a recurrence of this?
Through you, Madam Chair, I'll take that question. Apologies that I didn't catch it the first time. In terms of the unpresented checks, we have got a lot of old ones. They do go back a number of years and a lot of them are quite small. The reason we haven't cancelled them is there's a charge to cancel every single check at the bank, and the bank still honours them even when they're over 6 months old. Some banks don't and some banks do. So we are going to, as part of our transfer, write these checks off so they will not appear on next year's report and the matter will have been dealt with. And what I'd also say is, since we've gone to remote working, we are not actually writing many checks at all, so this will not carry on as an ongoing issue.
Thank you.
Drives to my question, which is, are we moving on to online banking as opposed to checks?
Basically, the only checks that we now send out are for housing benefits where the person hasn't provided us with a bank account, but they are a check of last resort, so we are trying to push everybody down a bank transfer as opposed to a check.
Roy, you happy with that, George?
I have the same issues at the post office, and that is that, you know, people who don't give you the information have got something to hide.
Oh, you can't see that all the time. Good grief!
Oh, can you
close your ears to that?
The ones to through you, Madam Chair. To be fair, the ones where so if people wanted a council tax refund, they had to give us the bank details to get us, as opposed to us paying the cheque. So
right,
where we can do it and we can force the issue, then we have done. So I think I haven't got numbers to hand, but I think we might have done 20 or 30 cheques in a whole year.
Okay.
Right, thank you. So you're happy with that, Ian?
Yes, thank you.
And Roy?
Yeah,
right,
yeah,
thank you. Moving on then, please. We're then at the page 27.
The 28
and
29.
I think
the
fees are too high,
Madam Chair.
Right.
Yeah, second
one.
Just
to
say about the fees, though.
You need to speak up, please.
Before we actually get the final fee confirmed, we have to actually go through moderation by the SAA, and they will just adjourn whether, you know, it's a fair reflection of a fee increase or not. So, yeah, so they might sometimes actually come back and say, actually, we think you should charge less, or they could say you could charge more. But it's more likely, you know, they'll probably honour the fee that's in here.
So, in actual fact, this is an outstanding debt. So, we haven't paid it and you haven't presented it,
really? We can't present the invoice until it's been approved by PSAA.
And how long do you get to present it?
I don't know. It depends. It's at their discretion. But most of the fee has actually already been paid.
Yeah.
So there's a scale fee which the council would pay on a quarterly instalment. Yeah. It's just the overruns and fee variations which will be outstanding to be paid. But I don't know exactly how much, you know, is outstanding. But generally, when we do issue our invoices, they do get paid promptly by the council.
Right. Okay then, moving on then, page 29, the management letter of representation.
So you want us to sign that now, do you?
So it's at your business discretion, Chair. We're in the process of getting the audit completion, and it should be completed by the end of the month at the latest. But so happy for you to sign the letter of representation, but I might just ask for your subsequent email on the day I sign the audit opinion, just to say, has anything changed? And that's just common practice.
So do we hold the letter in abeyance, or do I sign it?
Can
you bring them in?
Emma. Sorry, Emma.
Bring in Emma. Chair, that is a separate item on the agenda, yeah, that we'll go through discuss. So you will sign it tonight when we've gone through everything, the statements, and asked any questions at the end.
Okay then, Emma, that's fine. Right, thank you very much. Right then, members, anyone with any further questions? Roy?
No further.
No further questions. Peter?
No,
James?
Hello.
Ian?
No,
right then, can I ask members if you accept this report from Avatar?
Happy to accept you.
Right, thank you. So it's agreed that we accept the report. Thank you very much, Avatar. That was fine. Thank you. You're welcome to carry on sitting there if you're agreeing. Feel you want to go, feel free to go.
I'll just sit and just...
Okay, yeah, that's fine, thank you very much.
It doesn't increase the theme of
it. Right then, moving on. Right, we're moving on back to the agenda, please. We're at item 3B, Emma, and that's you for the statement of accounts, please. We're all looking now at the separate booklet, more or less, or we're looking at in conjunction with page 34, 35.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of this, I don't propose to go through the report in detail. As we've talked about, it talks about the key statements within the booklet, but I think probably what is useful is if we go through the booklet itself, maybe to these pages, and then the members ask any questions which they've got on the booklet itself. The report just talks about the narrative statement being the introduction as being the company report. It then looks at the contents about Infinite Venture Account on page 25, looks at the movement in reserves and the balance sheets, but I don't know whether you wish to go through the booklet and ask any questions that you have, or we can look at those particular pages however you wish to play it.
Right then, members, what we'll do, how we'll play this, shall we look at particular pages?
Okay, so.
Are we going through the booklet? Sorry.
We can go through the booklet. The narrative report is a very detailed report, which is all very helpful. Mm. And I don't know if any of you have any questions on the narrative report. That's pages 3 to 22.
No, I think it's an excellent narrative.
It is. Can I just say well done, Emma? That's a very detailed report, which has been very helpful to all of us.
Sorry, I've got two questions on the narrative.
That's fine, right, James. Feel free to ask them.
Just
direct us to the page, please.
It was just on page 11 under planning and regeneration. It said about development control, how there's been a reduced planning fee income of £39,000. Wondered if that was kind of a foreseen reduction in income, given that my understanding is that there's been a significant increase in the workload and applications.
Through you, Madam Chair, unfortunately our business is so delayed, this is actually looking at 2020-21, so there was a reduction at that time because we were still in the COVID time, and yes, it has increased. So the figure you'll see for 21-22, which then comes through, will be much higher, reflecting the uptake in planning fees.
All right.
Chairman?
Yeah.
I think also one of the factors there is that there have been a lot more planning applications, but they're smaller. There has not been the bigger applications that bring in the bigger money.
We did have lots of really major applications, didn't we? Yeah. Right, moving on, James.
And then there was just on page 18 where we're talking about future investments, plans for future developments. I noticed Meesbrook wasn't mentioned, which is, my understanding is, lots of work is already underway. So should that be mentioned?
For 2021, Emma?
Through you, Madam Chair, it was in the year before, and I think at this point it is still something that is live and maybe should be included. We're just trying to pick up new things that have happened during that year as opposed to things that are a continuation. So it's probably another section of these are future investments and these are continuing to develop on those items. So yes, they're still there, but we just wanted to put the new things in that were not there in 1920.
Right, thank you. Anything else, James, on that?
No, that was it.
Right, you're happy with that? So that's page 2, sorry, 22. The statement of responsibilities, 23. Right, and then if we move on then to page 25, Emma. Anything on the comprehensive income and expenditure account? That's page 25. The movement and reserve statement. The balance sheet? Roy?
First line there, Emma, sort of looks as though we've lost 5 million.
Yeah, through you, Madam Chair, there's 6 million is in relation to asset valuations. As we referred to earlier, there is a reduction of 3 million that was noted in the audit findings report. So the change is 4.3 million, so 6 million change in valuations and 1.8 million additions. That's actually in relation to three separate assets. So the waterfront car park, as we've talked about earlier, was actually reduced by £1.5 million in its asset valuation in 2021. We've also recognised the Victoria Park as an asset. And the valuer deems that although we spent £1.5 million on it, it didn't enhance the asset's value by that value. So it's 1.5 for waterfront, 1.5 for non-enhancement, and £2 million for depreciation. And all those add up to your change for the 6 million, less the additions is your change of 4 million.
Okay, yeah.
Right.
Further down, short-term creditors.
Same page?
Same page, yeah. Short-term creditors, there's a difference there of 5 million?
Yeah. So that is... So short-term creditors have increased by £5 million, and that reflects an increase in government creditors of nearly 9 million relating to receipts in advance of the COVID grant funding of 6.2 million and government business rates, and that has been offset by a reduction in local taxation, but it's primarily to do with increased receipts in advance for government funding that if we were to spend in 21-22 and then if unspent would ultimately be repaid in 22-23.
Ian?
Through you, Chair, yeah. There's a sizeable increase in short-term debtors. How is that explained?
Short-term debtors, through you, Madam Chair, have increased by 1.6 million relating to housing benefit subsidy. We've had debtors for sales fees and charges grants of 520,000, and then local taxation and NDR debtors have increased by 1.9 million nearly, which reflects the collection fund position at the end of the year. So the collection fund is in deficit by 25 million at the the end of the year, and that reflects that.
You're either very well prepared or you have an outstanding memory.
I cheated on that page 22.
Proving that I haven't.
My final one is on this page anyway, pensions. There's 8 million there.
So the pension relates to the increase in the liability, and that's as a result of changes in the discount factors and discount rates that the valuers, the pension actuary, is used to estimate the pension liabilities at the end of the year. And we've also made, which what I should say, the pension actuarial change is 10 million, but we've also made a pension prepayment. So that's why it's 8 million.
Okay.
Right, are you happy with that?
Yeah, happy with that. And I did say it was the last, but unfortunately it's not. Right at the bottom, usable reserves and unusable reserves, there's quite a difference in the figures there from 2020.
So the usable reserves have increased substantially, and that's primarily due to the Section 31 grant as a result of the business rates relief.
Okay.
So the government gave business rates relief to properties, well, businesses, but because of the rules, we can't apply those grants until 22-23 financial year. So there is 9.746 million waiting to be applied. So that's partly why these, mostly why the usable reserves increased, and there was also a planned contribution of 1.7 million to a business rates reserve, and then there's bits of reserves that we've added on to for the usables. Unusable reserves are reduced by 25 million, and that primarily relates to the pension fund changes, because we had a surplus in 1920 of 12 million and a deficit in 21-22 of 10 million. So that's a £22 million change just on that asset. And then there's also a difference between that and the pension liability reflecting the pension prepayment.
Okay, right. Yeah, I'm happy, Madam Chairman.
Okay,
yeah,
then, thank you, Mike. Did you have your hand up?
Yeah, thank you. It's just in relation to the first point. I understand what was said is that the devaluation of the waterfront car was associated with reduced income. If that's so, wouldn't the income and the economy improve? Presumably that will go back up again.
Thank you, Madam Chair, that is correct. In order to make sure that the asset valuations are always current, the waterfront car park is actually on our valuation schedule every year as it is, so dependent on the income level. So we have had that valued every single year, and we look to see what's happened with our asset base in order to determine what needs to be valued and what's happened and what's driving the asset values. So we take a rolling programme of 5 years, and we look at what else has had something material happen in it or is likely to be exposed to external factors when deciding whether something else needs to be valued during that year as well.
Right, okay. Right, moving on then. The cash flow statement. Nothing there. The notes to the accounts, is there anything there?
Not.
That's quite a lengthy, quite a few pages. Did anyone pick up anything that they wanted to ask there? Is there anything, Emma, you feel you would like to draw your attention to?
There's
been a lot of work done there, Emma, and I just wonder if you feel that you should draw your attention to the notes to the accounts.
Yeah, through you, Madam Chair, I don't think there's any other notes that are need consideration. Obviously, the primary records are the notes are just explaining the figures and referencing those that are already in the pages you've looked at.
Right. Roy, anything you want to?
I was just going to say, can we thank Emma and her team for
a
well-informed document and for her answers to our questions.
Yeah, there you go. If you're all happy then with the notes to the accounts, page 84, we're looking at the collection fund. So what we have to do then is to ask if you will approve the statement of accounts.
Move to approve, Madam Chairman.
Right, a seconder, James, please. Right, thank you. Right, can I just say thank you very much, Emma? That was splendid. And I appreciate the amount of time you've taken in preparing that report. So thank you very much. And if we move on then, we're moving to item 3C. Now that was the letter, the financial statements audit. Emma, do you want to present that to us, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of this, this is the management representation letter as referred to in Avatar's audit findings report, and this is just to say if you're happy as a committee that you're comfortable with what Avatar's looked at on the audit findings, you're happy that we've looked at the statement, and you're happy with that representing a true and fair view, and that you're happy, hopefully, to sign the management representation letter to be submitted to Avatar.
Well, although I'm going to sign them, am I signing on behalf of the committee?
Yes.
Well,
EP. No. I need you all to.
Madam Chairman, I think you should sign it. I don't think there's any grounds for not signing it.
So you're endorsing this letter?
Yeah.
Right, that's grand. I shall sign that. So you're looking for three signatures.
Name. So the chair just signs the top name, position and date, Emma.
And if the chair just signs item sort of filling out all the other bits.
No problem. So if you just
sign, I'll just say my name
on the top line there.
And you're all happy with that then?
Yeah.
Right, so what happens with that?
And there'll also be a signature required on the statement of accounts.
Right, so is that correct, Emma?
Yeah.
I'm signing the statement of accounts, and again, I'm doing it on behalf of you lot.
It's logical,
isn't it? Right, so.
She's insured.
Right, then, can I say thank you all very much, and Emma, I hope you feel better soon.
And thank you.
So, thank you for all your hard work, and also thank you to your team. Will you pass on our thanks, please? And
can I thank
Judith, thank you for coming all that way tonight. We can let you speak to us if you would like to, just to make sure you feel your journey was well worthwhile.
If I may, Chair, I might just ask Emma a quick question. Would you like me to bring the signed documents back to CAMIC?
You can do, that would be very helpful. Thank you, Judith.
Okay,
will do. Right, okay then. So I'm going to also thank Avatar for coming this evening. Thank you very much, Avatar. I hope you have a safe journey back home. And thanks to Cabinet Member for joining us. And Andrew, thank you for stepping into the breach and for looking after our sandwiches for us. And thank you all for your attendance. Have a safe journey home, all of you.